org. Let's go now to Michael William in Washington State, where he's a war resistor on the cutting edge of GI-supported business. We talked to Michael at his place of work, Coffee Strong, where active-duty troops from the nearby military base come for coffee and mix with veterans, resistors, and their families. Michael went to the National Guard in 2006 and departed in 2007, and I asked him why he joined the Guard.
I joined the National Guard because I wanted to continue my education at the University of Washington. I wanted to finish up my degree. I was very close to getting my degree in English there, and I simply ran out of money because of medical bills, and I felt like I didn't have any other options of getting back into school. And it was a pretty low point in my life as far as a very dear friend was raped, and my cat died, and another friend died, like, all within a month. And I wasn't really in the best state of mind, and I thought that, you know, joining the military was, you know, a good option for the situation I was in. And I didn't really consider the implications of what I would be trained to do.
Mm-hmm. When did you realize what you were being trained to do?
Well, since I joined as a cook, I was pretty naive. I thought that I wasn't really going to be training to take part in any combat situations.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I joined my National Guard unit, I scored expert with the 50 caliber machine gun, and my staff sergeant told me that that's what I was going to be doing in Iraq, that I would be manning a 50 caliber machine gun on a truck.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't like the first time that it became, you know, that I understood that that's what I'd be doing. Even during basic training, even during advanced initial training, it was pretty well understood, or at least we were told that cooks were not going to be cooking in Iraq, that they just did whatever was needed, including going out on convoys, you know, doing a tower duty, any number of things. So that, you know, didn't involve cooking in the least. The reason for that is that Kellogg Brown and Root contractors do all the cooking, and they do a lot of the support jobs that are historically positions filled by enlisted military. Now, the American taxpayers, they're paying to train all of these support members in the armed services to do jobs, you know, that they're never going to actually complete.
Mm-hmm.
Those jobs are being performed by third world nationals coming into Iraq as contractors to, you know, work very cheaply for the same job that, you know, that American troops were trained for.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what you're saying is in the old days, I guess this used to be called kitchen patrol. You'd be in the troops, the enlisted people would be in there peeling potatoes and washing dishes and stuff, and now
mm-hmm.
it's all contractors.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because my experience is the average American who's not got a family member or who doesn't know very much about the military really doesn't even realize that this is going on. They think that the military is the same old thing that it's always been, and folks are peeling potatoes as they always have done. But in fact, as you discovered, it is done all by contractors.
Well, I mean, I have never been in Iraq. I haven't had the firsthand experience. But generally what I've heard from everyone who has come into contact with, you know, the situation is that KBR is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They do so many of the positions, not just cooking, but all of the quartermaster kind of positions, a lot of radio operations. You know, I saw a very small portion of what it was like to be in the military, but yeah, I would say that this is not very widely known. A lot of times when people hear civilian contractors, they think of groups like Blackwater, who do security contracting. But having civilians take these non-combat jobs that are generally, you know, performed by service members, that frees them up to fill combat-related roles.
Mm-hmm.
I am not sure how many, what the current number is, but at one point there was 190,000 civilian contractors in Iraq when there were only 170,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Having that large number of civilian contractors allows us to carry on this operation in Iraq without, you know, a larger military force. That was all part of Rumsfeld's plan, was to have like a smaller force going in and fulfilling, you know, these military operations and not really needing to rely on public support. If we had a larger public, you know, support for the war in Iraq, then they wouldn't have to rely on stop loss. They wouldn't have to rely on extended tours of duty. They wouldn't have to rely on hiring civilian contractors to perform these jobs. That support is evidently not there.
Using the contractors also really hides the severity of what's going on over there, because there are very few tallies of how many contractors are dying, because, in fact, they come from all over the world. They come from South Africa. I know people that have family members in Iraq from South Africa. They come from all over. And so the numbers of people that are actually dying are really much greater than the average person even begins to realize. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's right. One of the most frustrating things for a lot of veterans, especially those that are actively involved with groups such as Iraq Veterans Against the War and GI Voice, is just the lack of awareness in the greater public. Many people are unaware that there are two wars going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
People are unaware that, you know, there are still deployments going on and that there are still people dying. Beyond that, there are a lot of other issues the military service members are facing, which, you know, the public just doesn't really seem to know about.
You're listening to Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Stanford, talking on the phone to Michael William at Coffee Strong in Washington State. We can hear in the background that there's a lot of activity going on there. And talk to our listeners about the kinds of systems that the troops, the active duty, and the veterans and the resistors are setting up around the country.
Coffee Strong is definitely an anti-war establishment. We've got a large banner advertising Iraq Veterans Against the War. This is support war resistors. And so it has the general feel, like it's very evident of where we're coming from politically. But generally when active duty people come in, the first thing that we try to do is lead them to our resource table. We have everything from getting out. It's a guide to military discharges, cards for the GI Rights Hotline, information to get in contact with a sexual assault advocate who will help men and women who have been sexually assaulted in the military to get out as quickly as they need to you know, get to some kind of safe base so that, you know, they're immediately removed from that danger. There's also free and confidential counseling for all veterans and active duty members through this network of local and I think the program is actually nationwide right now, but it's called the Soldiers Project.
Uh-huh.
And that that offers, like I said, soldiers, veterans, and military family free counseling. And that's unlimited, which is much better than what the VA offers. The VA will offer up to like 10 sessions for free. And then people are expected to pay after that.
They are?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. So 10 sessions free at the VA, and then after that you're on your own nickel.
That's right. And a lot of people don't want to do such things like that because, you know, there will be a paper trail, and if they're considering staying in the military, there are concerns that that will keep them from going up in rank.
Mm-hmm.
It will keep them from certain positions that they're trying to attain. So having a civilian, like, completely confidential and free program available for them, it will encourage people to seek out help when otherwise they might, you know, avoid it. And there's another great program. It's actually a DOD program. It's Military Family counseling, they aren't exactly able to discuss like the more political ends of things, mm-hmm. but it is confidential. There's no paper trail, so people will go to them for a number of problems that they're facing. And if subjects do come up that they can't discuss, we are here to kind of pick up where they end.
Uh-huh.
So if someone is facing stop loss, or if they're being harassed by their command, if they're being punished unjustly, or if they want to get out of the military, there's the GI Rights Hotline. That's going to help soldiers in those issues mm-hmm. that are facing those problems, help them find the best solution for them.
Michael, let me ask you about the active duty soldiers that are coming, because you're very close to Fort Lewis.
Yes, I'm standing inside the cafe right now, and just outside of our parking lot is I-5, the interstate, and just on the other side of that is Fort Lewis.
Hmm.
We are two blocks away from the entrance to Fort Lewis and also Camp Murray.
Hmm.
And the nearby Air Force Station, McCord. So we're kind of surrounded by military posts.
Have any of the officers ever come in and talked to you?
Officers have come in. Some of them, I think a few, have shown displeasure in what we're doing. But for the most part, we don't get too many officers here anymore. I think that might just be from my cold disposition towards them. We treat lieutenants all right, but once they get past captain, they're kind of, you know, once they get towards the field grade officer level, they're not really the best people.
Do you ever get active duty soldiers coming in that are ask you what you're doing, and or do they come in only when they're really kind of friendly towards the situation?
Well, I mean, we've seen an increase of all sorts of activity. We every single person comes in and is reacting to it in a different way, it seems.
Uh-huh.
I had this one National Guard soldier come in. She had been in for, I think, 24 years. So mm-hmm. she was in it for life, you know. And
yeah.
At first she asked if she was in the right place because she saw a large Iraq Veterans Against the War sign. I talked to her about the resources that we offer and, you know, made her a drink. Gave it to her for free. Actually, she was just getting coffee. We actually give free drip or Americanos to all enlisted. And since she was enlisted, you know, mm-hmm. I gave her free coffee, and she really liked that. And she was really excited about the resources we were offering. And her first impression of the place was that, you know, she wanted to turn right around and walk out. And she ended up, you know, shaking my hand and thanking us for what we were doing. And, you know, I've had other situations like that. Someone who was 19 and a half years through their service. That means they were 6 months away from retiring. In the military, after 20 years, that's when you're able to retire and receive retirement benefits. He was being stop-lossed, so his contract was being extended past his retirement to go do another tour in Iraq. And even he walked out of here with the GI Rights Hotline number, so, and he was also very happy with what we were doing. And those are two cases where I really did not expect that mid-level NCOs to be really appreciating what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so that was nice. But we generally get lower rank, lower level enlisted coming in. And, you know, there's a lot of mixed reactions, but I think people are really enjoying. And they're very happy about what we're doing here. We also do a number of concerts here. We've had a dozen or so since we opened last November 4th. And they're always free with military ID. You know, we try to do as many events as possible to entertain the troops. We have an open mic coming up just next week. It'll be our second one.
Are you able to fully support yourself there, or do you get some donation?
You mean, like, are we able to support ourselves as a business or
yeah,
a person?
Yeah, well, as financially.
We rely on donations
uh-huh.
at this point. We are very quickly expanding as far as, like, our business. We are always seeing increases in the day-to-day sales. And I think that soon enough we will be completely financially stable and, you know, able to be self-sustaining. But up until that point, we still rely on sustaining donors and other donations. Mm-hmm. Every single thing that we have in here has been donated to us, including a piano. We've got all the furniture, all the computers. We have an espresso machine that was donated to us. Stumptown Coffee Roasters that roast out of Seattle and Portland. They give us coffee for free.
Oh,
and that's what allows us to give free Americanos and drip coffee to the enlisted. We wouldn't be able to do this without all of that support. And if people want to find out how they can help us, I mean, visiting givoice.org or simply coffeestrong.com, either one of those, it's kind of run through the same website. I mean, they can see how they can help us. And sustaining donations is really what helps us out month to month. But right now, I'm the only paid employee at Coffee Strong. I will be here 4 days out of the week, and we have veteran volunteers who cover the other 3 days. I really would like the other volunteers to be paid for their work. I mean, they do a lot for Coffee Strong.
I'll make sure that we get a link up to givoice.org and coffeestrong.com so that listeners can go and learn more and do whatever they can do to help. There was Michael William at Coffee Strong, located outside two military bases in Washington State. I'll be at Coffee Strong in the afternoon of May 2nd to meet these folks, share the stories in my book, Long Time Passing, and bring you stories from Coffee Strong in Washington State. You can learn more about the event at www.mothersspeakaboutwarandterror.org or go to Coffee Strong at coffeestrong.com and givoice.org. You can also go to the show's website for more information. I'll have links on it. That's www.raisingsandradio.org.